Well, good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour. We are back live after Hurricane Dennis. This is, what is the date today, Jonathan? July 12th or 13th or something like that? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Somebody can call in.
12th.
Yes. 12th. Okay. July the 12th. We're, hello, wind around here. Things are a little disorganized. July 12th of 2005. And you can join us and be on the program. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. And the evolution theory being taught in our schools and parks and state-funded institutions in violation of the First Amendment, that theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. No dumber idea has been thought of than to teach the kids we all came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago, slowly or quickly, if you're from Harvard. Who else thought it might be quickly? Because you're just to Harvard. You got to be that smart to go to Harvard, you know. Okay. Anyway. So, you can join us on the program. After the hurricane, we had a little wind here. Not a whole lot of damage to the ministry. The guys have been cleaning up the last 2 days like crazy. I just got power back on about three hours ago. We've been running on generators for quite a while. Praise the Lord. Two people donated a pretty good-sized generator to the ministry last year after Hurricane Ivan, the Terrible, came through. And now Dennis the Menace came through, and we were able to put them to good use to keep things running in a semi-normal manner. We didn't quite have enough to run the AC, so it got a little warm in the house. Was your house warm there, Jonathan?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What you do in a situation like that, you sweat.
I went on a motorcycle ride 2 o'clock this morning because it was
to cool down.
Warm.
Yeah. Just to cool down. Yeah, somebody's got to do it. Okay. Well, so if you want to be on the program, give us a call, 850-479-3466. 850-479-3466, extension 136. And we'll be glad to take your call. 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live.
No, DR. You can't get on the Internet.
You can't get on the Internet. Let's see if I can click my little man. Internet can't be reached. Maybe they just have to call today.
We can figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Okay. We've had trouble with a few lines being broken and various assorted sundry things. But I still like Pensacola, in spite of the wind, okay, and the hurricanes. At least you get to see them coming. Those poor folks in California, the earthquake comes and they don't see it coming. So, okay, you can join us, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or you can possibly instant message us. We don't know. We're chasing down all these 4 bazillion wires that go through this thing. According to evolution, you know, complex things happen automatically. But we're unable to get it to work for us. Jonathan will figure it out. Okay, where's this Big Bang article, Jonathan? This is today, or
new.
July 2 through 8, Science and Technology News. This is from New Scientist magazine, the end of the beginning of the Big Bang. They're finally figuring it out, Jonathan. Well, I think there's hope. I've only been saying this for 15 years, you know, that it doesn't work. Big Bang Theory is dumb. It's retarded, actually. There's no... That's got to be one of the top 5 dumbest ideas, this idea that we all came from a Big Bang 4.6 billion years ago. Here's the article from New Scientist magazine. This would be last week. Title is The End of the Beginning. Cover story. It is time to admit that the idea of a Big Bang just doesn't stack up. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Is it time to admit that the idea of a Big Bang just doesn't stack up? Marcus Chown meets the doubters thinking the unthinkable. What if the Big Bang never happened? Ask cosmologists this, and they'll usually tell you that it's a stupid question. The evidence, after all, is written in the heavens. Take the way galaxies are scattered across the sky, or witness the fading afterglow of the Big Bang fireball. Even the way the atoms in your body have come into being over the eons. They are all smoking guns that point to the existence 3.7 billion years ago of an ultra-hot, ultra-dense state known as the Big Bang. Or are they? A small band of researchers are starting to ask the question no one is supposed to ask. Last week, the dissidents met to review the evidence at the first ever Crisis in Cosmology conference in Moncao, Portugal. How do they pronounce that, Jonathan? M-O-N-C-A-O. You speak Portuguese.
Yeah.
Manchao. Good. It's good. Nice to have somebody on the staff that speaks Portuguese. We got Russian, Portuguese, French, and Spanish. Okay. And a little bit of English. Okay, Manchao, Portugal. There, they argued that cosmologists' most cherished theory of the universe fails to explain certain crucial observations. If they are right, the universe could be a lot weirder than anyone imagined. Wait. You mean if the Big Bang is not true, that means the universe is weirder. Guys, think. Stop. Just a minute. There's another option, okay? If the Big Bang isn't true, maybe that means it was created. They don't even consider that. What they'll do, I haven't read the article yet, Jonathan, but I'm going to glance through here real quickly. I guarantee, instead of saying, hey, there must have been a designer, they're going to say, wow, we must have some other weird way it got here besides the Big Bang. Maybe a little fizzle or a big, you know, a big plop. Maybe they'll get the big plop theory in there now to explain, you know, what happened. Okay, well, let's go on here with this nonsense from newscientist.com. Let's see. A lot weirder. Where did I leave off here? Lost track. This is a very small printer. I found it. Okay. But before venturing that idea, say the dissidents, it is time for some serious investigation into the Big Bang's validity and its alternatives. Look at the facts, says Richard Sharpa of the European Southern Observatory in Santiago, Chile. The basic Big Bang model fails to predict what we observe in the universe in three major ways. The temperature of today's universe, the expansion of the cosmos, and even the presence of galaxies. Well, first of all, I don't know that the temperature of the universe is something that should be argued about for either side, creation or evolution, okay? They're finding a difference of about 30 millionths of a degree Kelvin in some of the places in space and saying that that means something. That is right at the limit, if it's even in the range, of the sensing instruments that are able to do this with, I believe it's COBE, COBE. Let's see. Secondly, the expansion of the universe, that also has some real serious doubters, including myself, that doubt the universe is expanding. I don't say it isn't. I just say I don't think we have the evidence to prove that. The only evidence given for this is the red shift, okay? And, of course, the need for the expansion of the universe based on the Big Bang. I mean, they need that to be true. So the red shift has several plausible explanations, which we cover on video number 7 of our award-winning, world-famous video series, Creation Science Evangelism Produces, on drdino.com. So check out drdino.com, drdino.com, and find out, watch video number 7 about starlight, and see how about the expansion of the universe. The red shift has several plausible explanations, one of which is the expansion of the universe, others of which may be equally valid. Okay, look at the facts. Third, he talks about the presence of galaxies. I would agree. The very presence of galaxies is proof, is evidence against the Big Bang, because Boyle's gas law tells us that gases do not clump together and make solids. Okay, it takes enormous pressure to get them to come together at all, and incredible pressure to get them to turn into a liquid, and then probably more pressure than is available to get them to turn into a solid. The idea that gases collected into a solid is ludicrous, but that's the theory behind the formation of stars. Here we have an estimated 70 sextillion stars in the universe. 70 sextillion. We've got million, billion, trillion, quadrillion, quintillion, sextillion. That's a lot, okay? And about 11 trillion stars per person on the planet. That's the current estimate. But they don't have a clue how even one of those stars managed to form. Not one. No clue at all. And yet, they want us to believe. They've never seen one happen, never seen one form, and don't have a clue how it could form. And yet here we have the evidence staring us in the face every night of 70 sextillion stars saying, look, we're here. So you got to come up with a natural theory for a star to form, and so far it goes against all the known laws of physics, or you got to admit there was a creator, period. No other known options. If you know of one, call in. We'll take your call on the program and try to get you, you know, thinking straight on this topic. 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, or if you want us to paper to call, 877-479-DINO, 877-479-3466, extension 136. Okay, or you can instant message us here. Once we get the wire traced down and find out what's broken, we will get it. So Richard Sharpo says that Big Bang model fails in three ways. I think it also fails in a fourth way, Ricardo. It fails with common sense, okay? Big bangs make big messes. Big bangs don't make nice, orderly universes. So it just fails on the grounds of common sense. That stuff doesn't happen. Okay, here we go. We'll finish the article here. The temperature of today's universe, the expansion of the cosmos, the presence of galaxies, all had cosmologists scrambling for fixes. Every time the basic Big Bang model has failed to predict what we see, the solution has been to bolt on something new. Inflation, dark matter, and dark energy, Sharpa says. For Sharpa and his fellow dissidents, the tinkering has reached an unacceptable level. All for the sake of saving the notion that the universe flickered into being as a hot, dense state. This isn't science, said Eric Lerner, who is president of Lawrenceville Plasma Physics in West Orange, New Jersey, and one of the conference organizers. Big Bang predictions are consistently wrong and are being fixed after the event. So much so that today's standard model of cosmology has become an ugly mishmash comprising the basic Big Bang theory, inflation, and a generous heaping of dark matter and dark energy. Boy, what on earth is Hugh Ross going to do now when the Big Bang theory is disproven? Poor guy, Hugh Ross from Reasons to Believe in California, Pasadena, California. I debated him once, three hours live with John Ankerberg. Nice guy, very smart man, but just absolutely dedicated to that dumb Big Bang theory. And I think he needs to get his life right with God on that one. Okay, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, if you want to be on the program. We're discussing the cover story in NewScientist.com, New Scientist magazine last week, called The End of the Beginning, The Story of the Big Bang. Jonathan, this article goes on page after page after page. The Big Bang Theory apparently is, as I have been saying for 15 years, a big dud. Okay, who we got on the phone there?
We've got, was your name Don Stevens?
Yes.
Yeah, Don on the phone. With
Don, yes, sir, Don. Go ahead. How can I help you?
Yeah, you're making some pretty interesting assertions there about the Big Bang and that.
Wait. Say that again. I'm making what kind of statements about the Big Bang? Inaccurate? I didn't understand what you said.
Well, yeah, they are definitely inaccurate.
They're definitely inaccurate? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just reading the New Scientist magazine. They're saying the Big Bang Theory is a dud, but go ahead.
Actually, they're not saying that. They're saying that there are certain parts of it that aren't exactly matching up with the, some of the observations that they're making, but that's the whole point of science, is you make observations and... if it doesn't quite fit the hypothesis, you revise the hypothesis.
Or, if you can't revise it sufficiently, you throw the hypothesis away and start over. Is that correct?
That's correct. However, Kent, what they're saying there, though, there's not enough to throw the whole theory out.
You don't think there's enough to throw out the whole Big Bang Theory? Do you think we need another patch job?
It's not just a patch job, Kent.
That's what it's been for the last 25 or 40 years, probably, since the Big Bang Theory was proposed by Edward Latimer. It was 1938,
actually,
I believe.
The Big Bang term was coined by, his name escaped my mind.
I think it was Latimer.
Fred Hoyle.
Or Fred Hoyle, yeah, okay.
But as far as the observations, the universe is expanding.
How do you know that? Wait, stop right there.
Because of the redshift.
You don't think there's any other explanations possible for the redshift?
It's a simple Doppler effect that can be recreated in a laboratory, can't it?
With light or with sound?
With both.
I know it works with sound. The theory is that it works with light. How could you recreate that in the laboratory?
Well, it's actually being recreated with probes like Galileo and Cassini.
Mm-hmm.
With their motion through space, and they first Galileo as it was orbiting Jupiter.
Okay, hold on just a second. We have a break coming up. We'll be back in about a minute and a half, and we'll take your comments on the Big Bang. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Evolution connected to immorality? Answers with Ken Ham, author of the popular book Genesis and the Decay of the Nations. Well, Ken, surely you're not implying that people who believe in evolution will also be immoral.
Well, no, not at all. But let me explain what I mean by connection between evolution and immorality. After a lecture I gave during my recent speaking tour of England, two teenage girls approached me. One told me she was a believer and she brought a non-Christian friend to hear me speak. The non-Christian girl said, "How come you said I would be immoral if I believe in evolution?" I told her I didn't say that at all. I then explained to her that the point I made in the lecture was that if a person doesn't believe in God, or that his word in the Bible is the absolute authority, then there was no basis for absolutes, for right and wrong. So I said, if you believe what the British Museum teaches, that man is just an animal and no different to a fruit fly, then human life has no value. Humans can determine their own morality, if they can get away with it. I then asked her, how can you insist that there are such things as right and wrong if you don't accept the Bible as the absolute authority? Well, you know what? She didn't have an answer. See, only the Christian can defend an absolute morality because they have the absolute word.
Is evolution connected to racism? Actually, much more than you might think. Find out more when you read Ken Ham's free booklet on racism when you log on to AnswersRadio.com. It's also an attractive witnessing tool. It's available free at AnswersRadio.com.
Whoa there, Paco!
Is this the spot, boss?
Sure is, Flapjack. Let's all dismount and start digging for the treasure.
My heart was beating like popcorn. That's when I saw Paco fiddling over there with his laptop.
You hombres got it all wrong. If you want buried treasure, you have to dig deeper.
We are, Paco. All you're doing is just
digging for treasure.
You're going online? Here?
Not just online. I'm headed for BibleDiscovery.org.
Yes, I see. What about the treasure?
Oh, it's all there. Unlike the stuff you're digging for. Bible study that fits my schedule and my interest. I can study online or off. Subjects I like. Inside I need.
Yeah?
All at BibleDiscovery.org.
Now, just hold your horses.
I am. They're tied on to the wireless motor.
Oh, a good idea.
BibleDiscovery.org. Your treasure is waiting.
Welcome back, folks, to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Jonathan Sampson and Kent Hovind back live after Hurricane Dennis came through here and stirred up the city a little bit. Not near as bad as Hurricane Ivan, but you can join us here. It's July the 12th of 2005, and you can join us here at drdino.com. Our screen name, Dr. Dino Live, works on AOL Instant Message, or you can call us at 850-479-DINO, extension 136. But the screen name doesn't work today, right, Jonathan? Can't get internet work. He's working on that. Okay, Don, you called in to say that I'm being, whatever term you want to use, inaccurate about describing the Big Bang Theory. You think there is evidence for the Big Bang?
Yes.
Okay, and go ahead now. As I was saying before,
one of the evidences for redshift or Doppler shift, which is more the proper term, is earlier this year when they were about ready to drop the Huygens probe on Saturn, they found a flaw in the software that would not account for the Doppler shift probe dropping and leaving the Cassini spacecraft and dropping into the atmosphere of Titan. If they hadn't found a way to correct this, that means they would not be able to retrieve the data coming from the probe. This was because of Doppler shift. Now, Doppler shift doesn't exist.
Oh, wait. You're
and
saying...
Why would they have to account for that?
The distance from Earth to Saturn is, 5 astronomical units, which is about...
That's actually, from us, it is 8.
Which depends which side of the sun we're on, right? Okay, because
yeah.
We're both orbiting. Okay. So 8 at about 8 minutes per astronomical unit, so about 60 minutes, about a one-hour time for the light or the radio signal to get here.
Talking, though, between the probe that they dropped Cassini itself. There was sufficient Doppler shift that if they hadn't corrected it in the software, they would not have been able to retrieve the data.
So you're saying that the probe was sending back data at the speed of light via a radio wave,
mm-hmm.
and they had to adjust to allow for the Doppler effect of the radio signal coming to Earth.
No, coming to the probe.
Coming to the probe.
They're both moving.
Right.
Okay. And that would induce enough Doppler shift in the radio signal because the receivers on the probe are only designed to receive a certain frequency range.
Yeah, but they can't store the data and get it later. It has to be live read.
No, because of the Doppler shift, they would not have been able to even retrieve the data. The receiver would not have picked it up unless they corrected that in the software.
I don't understand that because I'm getting a Doppler effect every time I talk to somebody. Like today, somebody called from Norway. Got to be a good second and a half lag time. and we would talk just fine. But anyway, okay,
neither of you are moving though at any significant velocity, right?
I guess actually Norway is closer to the pole, so it has less lateral motion than I do here at Pensacola, Florida. Probably insignificant.
You're both on a stationary on the Earth's surface, though, right?
Sure. Okay. So you're saying there.
No,
I agree there is a red shift. I agree there is a red shift. Okay.
Okay, and that's caused by Doppler motion.
Not necessarily. Let me read you what some of the others have said, if you're interested. Have you seen my video number 7?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Here's a Sky and Telescope magazine. December 1994, so 10 years ago.
Can you do me a favor?
Sure.
Can you give me a source from a peer-reviewed journal?
As opposed to, I will, yeah, I've got quite a few sources here, okay. Here's what, the article by Jeffrey Burbridge and Al Adelaide Hewitt. The title is A Catalog of Quasars Near and Far. Sky and Telescope, December 1994, page 32. They said, and I quote, "There was an early sign that redshifts reliably indicate the distances of galaxies. For quasars, however, the diagram shows a wide scatter in apparent brightness at every redshift. In fact, there is little correlation of brightness to redshift at all. Either quasars come in an extremely wide range of intrinsic luminosities, as most people believe, or their redshifts do not indicate distance." We don't know. If you think redshift is caused by the Doppler effect, I taught physics, I understand thoroughly what it's supposed to do, and it may be correct. That may indeed be correct. However, I think it's wise to point out, and any scientist would say this is certainly wise, to look, are there other things that may be causing this? You don't know that, you know, A causes B necessarily.
Okay, here's the thing, though. Since 1923, when Hubble first observed this, there have been many other causes expounded upon in the intermediate. The only cause that has tested out through observation is expansion.
Okay, first of all, I have never said there is no redshift or the universe is not expanding. All I've said is we need to look carefully and see, are there other things that could be causing this?
Okay, what are other things that cause it, Ken?
Well, 17 times in the Bible it says God stretched...
Okay, no.
Peer-reviewed journal.
The Bible is a 2,000-year-old book. It is not a reliable source of science.
Well, you have two separate statements there. I agree with the first one. I disagree with the second one.
Ken, it's written 2,000 years ago, back when people thought thunder and lightning was caused by God or the gods.
And that's not taught in the Bible, though. Everything in the Bible is accurate. You know if something is inaccurate in the Bible?
Ken, I used to be a fundamentalist Christian.
Well, we can fix that.
I used to be a believer.
We can fix that, too.
Until I started looking at the evidence.
What evidence?
So I started observing the fact that science has been tested throughout the years again and again, all right? It's falsifiable.
I agree. Okay,
you cannot make claims, though, in the Bible falsifiable.
Oh, I think there's... Wait a minute.
It seems to be the devout word of God.
Now, hold it down. Slow down. Let's take one topic at a time, okay? Because people get a little confused out there. It is true that the Bible... there are 31,000 verses in the Bible, okay? There are many scientific claims, many, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. For instance, way before the hydraulic cycle was understood, the Bible says all the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. From the place where they came, thither go they again, or something to that effect. In other words,
is a bat a bird or a mammal?
A bat is a flying animal. And
is it a bird or a mammal?
Yeah. In biblical classification systems, I guess it would be considered a bird. Just like a whale would be considered
a mammal. Though.
Well, by today's classification system, think about it, okay? Just because we have modern classification system, you can't impose that on a book written 2,000 years ago and say, see, they're wrong because we changed the terms. That's dumb, okay? Think about it. You're imposing today's scientific terms on a book that was written before these terms were invented. A whale in the Bible is considered a fish, and it does swim in the water, okay? So you can't, just because we, in the last 400 years, have changed the boundaries, you can't say the Bible is wrong. Surely you can figure that out, Don.
Actually, I have, Kent. That's why I'm an atheist now.
You think because of that...
I'll tell you what, Kent. Let's leave the Bible on, because your show is, of course, about evolution, things like that. Let's get back on that topic.
Okay.
You talked earlier about star formation, correct?
You said the redshift is proven... is proof that the, like, I don't find words in your mouth,
is proof that the universe is expanding, and I have said over and over and over, it may be, but there are other things that may be causing that.
Okay, what, Dan?
Okay, on my video number 7, I go through several things that may be causing the redshift. 17 times in the scripture, it does say God stretched out the heavens. Okay? That's just a fact. It says that. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. I don't know anybody that does. But the Bible clearly teaches that the earth was made first, and then the stars were made. So everybody's worried about how the light got from the stars to here. If he stretched out the heavens, they should be worried about how the stars got from here to there instead of the other way around. What is space made of? Is space...
So, Ben, let me get this straight. So what you're doing, you're starting with an assumption that...
No, I'm starting with an eyewitness...
That the Earth was first, right? That's your assumption.
No, I'm starting with an eyewitness observer who tells us that the Earth was first, and he's the one who did it.
Okay, well, why doesn't that eyewitness observer come forward today?
Why should he have to? He doesn't have to please you. He wrote a book. Microsoft gurus, why don't they come forward? They wrote it in a book. Here's the way it works. You know, if you don't read the book, okay? God wrote an owner's manual. Henry Ford didn't go around with every car that he built and say, oh, hey, here's how you put the key in. Here's how you turn it. Here's how you shift gears. Man, I wrote the book. Just read the book.
Actually, okay. They come with owner manuals and they explain that stuff, actually.
Okay, so the point is, the Bible does teach the earth was made first and then the stars, and it does teach that God stretched out the heavens. I point out that as light travels through a medium, such as a prism, it bends, and it bends different amounts based upon the energy in the wave. Red bends further, for instance, than orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, okay, which breaks it up into the light spectrum of the prism. That's just a physical fact. So is space actually made of nothing, or is space something? This has been argued for centuries. We've got a break coming up. I hate to keep you hanging here. If you don't mind, though, I want to finish the discussion because we want to get you back converted to serving the Lord. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, folks. Hang on.
We're here with Amazing Ellen at the wildest roller coaster ride in the world.
Okay, what are you going to do? Slam me into a wall?
No, Ellen. As a matter of fact, I will ride the roller coaster with you.
Really?
Sure, Ellen. Hop in.
Okay.
I'll just pull down my safety bar.
Where's my safety bar?
Ellen, you don't have a safety bar, huh? You're illustrating going through life's ups and downs without God.
But what if there's a loop de loop?
Ellen, we were not meant to handle life's uncertainties like this drop without God.
Whoa!
Ellen? I'm illustrating going through life's wild turns with God. No matter what comes my way, I know God is in control and I'm right where He wants me to be. Ellen, without God, we live our lives in fear of what might happen to us. When we know God, we can have peace through all of life's twists and turns.
There's got to be a better way to make these points, guys.
A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
Thanks for listening to www.truthradio.com. Truthradio.com on the Internet is our central location. You may sometimes find us broadcasting elsewhere through a local station, through a shortwave station, but if you visit www.truthradio.com, you will find us. Visit often and listen all the time.
David Gibbs and his son gained some degree of prominence recently in the Terry Schiavo case, and they're good lawyers, and these people are very well-intentioned. They do a lot of good work. They send out a news release, a news letter. I got that letter. In it, David C. Gibbs, Jr. had this to say, and I want to comment on what he said. Our founders would wince at the idea that the Constitution they wrote somehow is somehow living. and thus open to interpretation based on the shifting sands of societal change. Wrong, Attorney Gibbs. Wrong, they would not wince. They knew when they wrote those words that unless they protected those words would change. And that's the problem with our nation today. We need to set those words in concrete and do away with the practice of looking to precedents as some being authoritative.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson speaking to you live this July the 12th after Hurricane Dennis the Menace came through here and tore up the city. So we're doing pretty good. We got power back on, never did lose water or gas, and I was preaching in Georgia when it happened. Two big trees came down, didn't do much damage at all, maybe $15,000, $20,000 to everything here. So we're doing fine. And you can call in to be on the program here, 850-479-DINO, as Don has done. We'll get back to Don in a second. 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Or you cannot instant message us today, so I guess that's tough. We'll work on that. A little technical problem for tomorrow. Okay, Don, I'm giving you the floor. Here, tell me about the Big Bang, and I'm going to stop you. I want one point at a time. You're saying the redshift is evidence that the universe is expanding. I'm simply arguing there may be other things that cause this.
Okay.
One of which may be whatever space is made of, one of which is the stretching from creation. Okay, that would cause a redshift. If the star is traveling away, that could just as easily be explained by the stretching, because God created Earth first and then stars. Just that is the point that I would make. Secondly, does light get tired as it travels great distances? Is energy being lost causing a redshift? This has been proposed many, many times for an explanation of the redshift. Could it just be what they call tired light? You get the same effect when you run light through a prism and the different colors bend different amounts based upon their energy. If space is truly nothing, this may not happen, but if space is if there's anything in space, it may cause that effect. It may also be light is being slowed down or speeded up by gravity or a black hole or something that is causing the light to be speeded or slowed as it travels these great distances.
You're talking about gravitational redshift there, and that's taken into account as well.
Well, you mentioned it yourself, gravitational redshift. I mean, what's causing the redshift?
In that case, it's gravity, and there's an easy way to determine what is causing that effect.
So is there a difference between gravitational redshift and normal redshift?
Yes.
How do you tell the difference?
The difference, you can tell, if you're looking at something that contains a large concentration of mass, you know, like near the event horizon of a massive black hole.
How do you know you're looking at the edge of a black hole? How on earth can you know such a thing?
Well, here's how we know. I think the woman was it a few years ago, maybe a little longer, I can't even remember the exact date. Hubble Space Telescope took some very high magnification spectrographic images of the center of a galaxy called M87,
mm-hmm.
So in the constellation of Virgo. And in the center of that galaxy, by looking at the material orbiting around something in the center of this galaxy, okay, at first they weren't sure what it was, okay, but looking at the velocity of the material going around, using Kepler's laws of motion, Newton's laws of motion, things like that, you can calculate the mass that's in the center of this galaxy.
Uh-huh.
And what they came up with was a mass of about 1 billion times the mass of the sun. All right, and that mass was concentrated in such a small area, no bigger than the size of our solar system, which would be about 30, 40 astronomical units across, or 30, 40 times Earth's distance from the sun.
No, it's 40 astronomical units to Pluto, 39.44, so 80 astronomical units apart.
Well, 80, then, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I was thinking radius. But anyway, that much mass concentrated in that much area, according to the laws of physics, even quantum mechanics, using Einstein's general theory of relativity, you can calculate this out, that the only possible thing this could be is a black hole.
Now, there you go. Right there, you jump from science to philosophy.
How?
The only possible thing this could be is a black hole.
Okay, what else can it be, Kent?
I don't know. Don't you think, though, looking at the history of science for the last 200 years, that it would be wise to withhold a judgment like that? I mean, how many times have they made, the only thing that can cause this is this, and later turn out to be wrong? I'm not saying it's not a black hole. I don't know. I'm just asking, how on earth do you know you're looking at the edge of a black hole? I mean, think about it. How can you know such a thing?
Well, Kent, like I said, because of the amount of mass, that much mass compressed together cannot support its own weight. There's a 3.5 solar mass limit that you can compress matter down in that small of an area and not have it become a black hole.
So after 3.5, the mass is so great that even the escape velocity exceeds the speed of light.
Yes.
Okay. So let's assume you're looking at a black hole. What I said was that one of the things maybe causing the red shift is light being speeded up or slowed down by gravity, i.e.,
well, see,
such
it's
as...
Not, it's the gravity is not slowing the light down, Kent. It's not slowing down or speeding it up. The light's maintaining the exact same velocity. All it's doing is stretching the wavelength. That's what the shift is.
So do these intense gravitational...
Speed of light is the speed of light.
Yeah, I would disagree on that, too, but that's another story. Do the intense gravitational masses of these supposed black holes deflect light that's coming close enough, not close enough to get pulled in, but close enough to be bent around it?
Yes, Ken.
Okay.
Doesn't change the velocity of the light.
Would that cause a red shift if the light's being bent, like going through? The effect would be the prism.
Well, actually, even going through the prism, it doesn't slow the light down.
Well, could it be?
All it's actually doing... is because of different frequencies, they have different angles of deflection going into a different medium.
Uh-huh. So you don't think it could be like a virtual prism that is causing this redshift?
Yeah, what you're trying to use is gravitational redshift and also gravitational lensing to explain something that's totally unrelated.
Okay, well, I was trying to understand.
We're talking about when they measure these quasars, they're measuring the light of the entire galaxy, not just near the black hole. Okay? And so... on the edge of the galaxy, it's not going to be affected by the gravity of the black hole.
Okay, are you familiar with the article written just a few months ago about the supposed, University of California, San Diego, where's this article from? I got the reference here. Date is January 20th of 2005. Quasars with enormous redshift found embedded in nearby spiral galaxy with far lower redshift. Unsolvable problem for Big Bang astronomy.
No, Kent. What that was is that it's a line of sight thing. That galaxy is a foreground galaxy. The quasar is behind it.
You're sure?
Yes.
I actually saw a pretty interesting documentary not too long ago, which was showing connecting material going from one to the other. Let me think. I'll see if I can figure out the astronomer's name, but he was actually talking about exactly what you just mentioned, Don, the assumption that there's just one thing in front of another, which makes it look like it's kind of straight.
Well, it may be, right.
But he's saying there are interacting
galaxies
that have
different redshift.
Well, he's saying the Z-index is so... Well, hold on a second. He's saying, this is astronomer, he's saying the Z-index of both of these is so completely different from each other, the distance from the viewer... but yet they have material connecting them. And that's his whole argument.
So did you read the article? This is astronomer Dr. John Hartnett, Hartnett, in Australia.
Yeah, what is he saying? What is he saying the differences between the two?
Jason Lyle, a PhD in astrophysics, he actually was talking about it on one of his lectures on, I guess, astronomy in the Bible. He does a lecture like that. But he's not the one that actually measured those distances. He was talking about the astronomer that was and referred to his major publication.
Well, we're getting a little off track. My point is, I think you'd have a hard time, you certainly would have an impossible time proving in a court of law that redshift is...
Hey, Ken, you need to drop the... I know you use that court of law analogy all the time, and it just doesn't hold because there have been court cases challenging evolution versus creationism in the courts. And hands down, evolution has won every time.
Well, then you need to drop the
cosmology. So.
Okay, hold it. You need to drop the peer-reviewed journal argument because all kinds of articles appear in peer-reviewed journals that are later proven to be wrong. But
that's why they're in peer-reviewed journals, to be reviewed and be proven if they're true or false.
But my point is that doesn't help.
They've they've taken the step of putting that stuff out there to let other people examine it, okay, instead of just making assertions about it and claiming it to be true.
Okay, my point is, just because something passes the peer review panel and does get published, still does not prove it is true.
Well, there are 10 pages on halos.com, Robert Gentry's website, and he shows 10 evidences for censorship in peer-reviewed journals. He was a prolific writer and publisher in peer-reviewed journals on
yeah,
the big journals.
Yeah, I looked at that site.
And he has 10 pages showing that they have censored him once he started getting real heavy into his zircon studies.
Actually, I've read that, and it wasn't that they weren't just, I don't really interpret that as them censoring it. It just...
So they took his passwords and everything away from him to get in there and publish new material.
Well, now, wait a minute, Don, let's get to the meat here. Would you agree that in the Soviet Union 15 years ago, the peer-reviewed journals would not publish anything that has to do with capitalism? It only had to praise communism. Would you agree there was a censorship?
In the Soviet Union?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Do you think it's possible that there's similar censorship today in America over the evolution creation topic?
Most of these peer-reviewed journals today aren't published in the United States.
Okay, I'm just asking, do you think it's possible?
They're international collaborations.
Is it possible?
You're trying to say there's some conspiracy or something. I just don't see it.
I know you don't see it, but I'm asking you, is it possible? For instance, article WorldNet Daily, January 29th this year, quote, "The career of a prominent researcher at Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History in Washington is in jeopardy after he published a peer-reviewed article by a leading proponent of intelligent design, Richard Sternberg. He has been kicked out of his office and shunned by his colleagues." Here's a guy who, a peer-reviewed journal, they published an article, but the problem is one of the authors in the article is a guy who happens to believe there might be an intelligent designer, so they kick this guy out of his office for allowing such a thing to slip through the cracks.
I think that Stephen Meyer was the author of the article.
Yes, there is certainly a censorship here in this country over...
Okay, that might be in the country, okay, but I don't see it internationally.
I think it's probably worse internationally, because most other countries don't have the strong creationist movement here that America does. I've been to Soviet...
Actually, some of them have strong creationist movement. It's just other religions, not Christianity. There's some that are Muslim, there's some that are
Hindu.
There's
like one guy, there's that Haran Yahuwah, who actually goes around with the Islamic creation. But I've never heard of anybody, you know, more than just the Mr. Haruo guy teaching the Islamic creation thing. Which is completely irrelevant, but it's, you know, that is definitely not on par with the creation movement in America, or in France, or in Australia, or in New Zealand.
We're not going to really go anywhere with this. Let's talk about something else you brought up.
Don, hold on. Right. Let me explain. I want to explain why, though. I have to stop you at every point, because people like you call in all the time, and I do debates all the time, and what happens is they make 20 or 30 different points, all machine gun fire, and it sounds to the audience like, wow, this guy's got proof, and you have to take them one shot at a time and say, no, there are other ways to explain this. You may or may not be right. And so I don't think you've proven your point that the redshift is the only probable cause of the redshift is expansion. However, I will say that is certainly possible that it could be causing it. But there are other options, which I gave you, okay?
Well, you know, for instance, the whole thing started out, Dr. Hovind, you're reading this article from a New Scientist, which is not a creationist adoring magazine. They really don't like us. Actually, you can check out their latest issue, which is
The
latest one is
See,
Leaving
the
Reason.
Though,
well, hold on a second.
Don.
Hold on a second.
No.
I'm going to mute Don for a second here.
Okay, this is our program. We're getting back on here. We've got plenty of time. Go ahead.
Okay, now, this whole thing started out, Dr. Hovind, just reading this article, and then we have Don, who's a very nice guy, who says he's an astronomer, called in, and says that the article is not saying the Big Bang is insufficient. It's saying they need to patch up parts of it that don't fully explain the information, or they're a little foggy. I just went through... And, Don, you're not muted now, but if you've got the article in front of you, I challenge you to check it out because it is saying the Big Bang is insufficient. It's not saying let's patch it. And I went through and I highlighted just a couple of their claims because these claims were coming from New Scientists. They weren't coming from Dr. Hovind or us.
I've read the article. I don't have it right in front of me, but I have read the article.
Don make his point now.
Yeah, this just came out in the past few days here.
Here's the thing, John.
Well, hold on
a
second. Okay, what do you want to say?
Well, here's the thing, okay? For some reason, you guys clamp on when you see the words controversy, trouble, or things like that, and you suddenly think that the whole thing is in trouble.
That is what this article is saying.
Let me finish. Right? You constantly say that there are, you know, controversy. Like, of course there's controversies. Of course there's conflict. That's the whole nature of science. You know, science is about approaching the truth. It's not about absolute truth. Right? That's up to philosophy and religion. And most of us don't have anything against people pursuing philosophy or religion to find their ultimate truth.
Well, we're talking about this specific article.
All right. Well, I'm getting that, okay? Yeah, so the article, you know, says that there's some controversy or something.
It doesn't say that.
There's also the controversy.
It doesn't say that. If you read it like you just said you did, you would not be saying... You would not be making these words, because the article does not say there's a controversy.
Jonathan's right, Don, you're wrong. The article says the theory's in trouble.
You got the front cover in front of you there, Don?
It's not in trouble.
Don, do you
not
have the front cover? The front cover says the end of the beginning. It has the Big Bang.
One magazine
with a, hold on a second.
Saying that, okay?
Well, we're talking about this
there's
one magazine.
Jonathan,
Don, I'm
going to have to
mute him again.
Don, you're changing horses here.
Don,
you said the magazine doesn't say that. We're saying it does, and now you're saying, well, it's just one magazine. It does say that. Just admit it. You're wrong. The magazine says the theory's in trouble.
They couldn't get any more clear.
So it says it's in trouble.
Good. It says the end of the beginning has a big bang on the front cover of a wrecking ball.
Admitted it. The magazine says
that magazine says the theory's in trouble.
Good. Thank
magazine.
You, sir. That's all I wanted. Now,
okay.
Go ahead.
Now, let me just go ahead and read a couple things out of here, since we both agree on that. And, again, if you want to check it out later on and read it, you can give us more input if you want to. Let's see. This is a quote here, actually, reading on. It says, take the most distant galaxies ever spotted, for example. According to the accepted view, which is the Big Bang, when we observe ultra-distant galaxies, we should not see them in their youth, or we should see them in their youth, full of stars not long spawned from gas clouds. This is because light from these faraway galaxies has taken billions of years to reach us. And so the galaxies must appear as they were shortly after the Big Bang. But there's a problem. We don't see young galaxies, says Lerner. We see old ones. He cites recent observations of high redshift galaxies from NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope. A galaxy's redshift is measured by how much the universe has expanded since it emitted its light. As the light travels through an expanding universe, its wavelength gets stretched, which Don was explaining to us earlier.
Okay,
as is the light. What's that?
Can I comment now?
Well, one second. I'm almost done with my highlighted area. I took so much time to highlight this, too. Okay, it says, its wavelength gets stretched as if the light were drawn into a piece of elastic. The increase in wavelength corresponds to a shift towards the red end of the spectrum. The Spitzer galaxies have redshifts that correspond to a time when the universe was between 600 million and 1 billion years old. Galaxies this young should be full of newborn stars that emit blue light because they are so hot. The galaxies should not contain many older stars that are cool and red, but they do, says Lerner. This is the last paragraph right here. It says, it turns out these galaxies aren't young at all, says Lerner. They have pretty much all the same range of stars as present-day galaxies, and that is bad news for the Big Bang. Among the stars in today's galaxies, our red giants have taken billions of years to burn all their hydrogen and reach the bloated phase. So Spitzer observations suggest that some of the stars in ultra-distant galaxies are older than the galaxies themselves, which plunges the standard modern model of cosmology into crisis.
Okay, Don called in. Now, he's our guest on the program. Don, tell us, by the way, we're supposed to have another caller today, Jonathan. I mean, creationist, I'll look at the calendar. Don, go ahead. Tell us now more.
All right. Well, essentially what the article is describing is, yeah, they're observing galaxies that look like they're older.
Well, they're using the same measurement. They're using the same measurement devices and processes that you trust as an astronomer.
Yeah,
and they're saying these are telling us
they're
too young.
All right, there's another recent court case published, though.
Well, one second, we got a break right now. We have a break right now, Don. We'll bring you right back after the break, okay?
All right.
After you become acquainted with Truth Radio, it becomes clear to you that part of what Truth Radio is all about is we share with each other. And there's a man in Minnesota who has done just that repeatedly. And one of his gifts to Truth Radio is a DVD entitled Hijacking America.
Now, this is something that, yes, it did originate on satellite TV, but I doubt very much if you saw it. This is something about the Bush administration and about the government under which we now live that you need to see and you need to share with your friends, and I'll be glad to send you a copy of this DVD. I'm all set with a brand new DVD burner that works great, and I'm anxious to use it, and I want to send you a copy of Hijacking America. Ask for it when you write Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. That's P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444.
Christ's first miracle. Was it at a wedding? Answers with Ken Ham, one of North America's best-known Bible conference speakers. Well, Ken, I've always been told that Jesus' first miracle was when he turned the water into wine at the wedding feast at Cana. But do I understand here that this isn't so?
Well, you know, almost everyone thinks that this was the first miracle performed by Jesus, but that's not really the case. I posed this riddle to our staff recently, and some of them came up with the answer. Well, first, John 1, verses 1 to 3 state, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made." Also, Colossians 1:16 states, "For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible." So if the Bible clearly teaches that Jesus was the creator of everything, then the first miracle he performed isn't found in John chapter 2, it's really in Genesis 1:1, where we read, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth." You see, God the Son, Jesus Christ, was the creator, and his perfect creation was the very first miracle.
Find out more about Christ's first miracles in the book of Genesis when you read Ken Ham's fascinating booklet, The 6 Days of Creation. It's free when you log on to AnswersRadio.com. You'll be tremendously built up in your faith when you go to AnswersRadio.com. That's AnswersRadio.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to next to the last segment. Welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind, Jonathan Sampson, July 12th after the hurricane. We're doing fine. No scar on the leg this time, Jonathan. Last time I got nicked by the chainsaw, 15 stitches. Oh, well. Okay, Don, we've been on here a long time. We're going to let
you finish your point.
Sure.
Okay. Now, what that article was saying is, yes, indeed, there are what life in the quasars does appear to be in the half of stars that seem to be very old. Okay. Here, excuse me, what they are figuring out, there's some other papers here published recently, is that earlier in the universe, during a period they called the end of the ionization period, which is the point that the universe is cooled enough to where stable atoms could form, okay? Once you had stable atoms, then with gravity involved, you could make stars, all right? At first, they were making an assumption, I'll admit, but it was an incorrect assumption that stars form normally as they do today, all right, in the universe. What they're finding out is that is not, in fact, the case. The stars actually formed, since they were made of pure hydrogen, they got much larger and lived much shorter lives than they do today.
Okay, right,
Hold on, let me finish, Ken.
This is Jonathan.
You can ask your questions when I'm done.
This is Jonathan. Oh, like it's his program. Go ahead.
All right. Now, what a star is, it's a big nuclear reactor. It's turning the hydrogen, the process called fusion, into heavier elements, such as helium and so on and so forth, up through iron and things of that nature.
That is an assumption.
And what these stars are doing when they're exploding with supernova is they're making what's called the rare earth elements in the supernova explosion. And this has been observed in the spectrum of supernova that actually happened.
Can I ask a tiny question just real quick?
Correct.
Are you saying that the Big Bang can handle old stars any place in the galaxy or in the universe?
The Big Bang, as it was initially postulated and things like that, of course not.
But of course, the changes, because we're finding...
Just because you change it doesn't make it wrong, though.
No, I'm not saying that. But we're finding old stars...
in young locations, supposed young locations.
Yes, but I'm explaining
but,
okay, why that
so
is.
Just real quick, you're saying that the Big Bang can now handle old stars in young locations and young stars in old locations. It doesn't matter where the star is. It just means the star formed differently.
Correct.
Okay, so what would it take, just for me, a layman, what would it take to throw this idea out? You know, this guy right here, Lerner, on the next page, he says, contrary to what your initial claim was, he says, I can prove the universe wasn't born 13.5 billion years ago. The Big Bang never happened. So if this guy really does think that the Big Bang never happened, what should he be looking for? Because he's showing us old stars in young locations, and I guess that's not sufficient now.
Is there anything that would prove the Big Bang wrong to you?
Or would you just continuously change it to embrace new observations?
Or do you have a religious attachment
to this? That's what you do with science. You constantly change it to match observation.
At what level do we say, okay, this is ridiculous, we're just putting way too many Band-Aids on this dam, let's figure out something else, start from a new ground. At what point do you finally get there?
Well, I don't think
that,
I'll ever
I don't, that I don't know. I don't know what point it would get to where it was no longer a valid theory.
Yeah, I don't
However, think. I can guarantee you this. If this is proven wrong, by default, creationism is not going to be proved right.
I know that, but that's not the point right now.
Let me finish my statement.
That's not the point,
right?
though. Well, you're getting off topic here.
Jonathan.
This guy is saying that there are so many just bizarre assumptions for the Big Bang, and he says he's finding things all over the place that are just slapping it right in the face. When does it become sufficient for him to finally have a
Jonathan,
case?
Jonathan, they're not finding things all over the place that's slapping it right in the face.
All right, well, let me finish reading this article for you then, because he's got probably five or six different observations in here that he's been going through and showing how they're just not working with the Big Bang. He's got gravity in crisis. He's got the cosmic microwave background radiation situation there. He goes all through practically every one of the major evidences for the Big Bang and shows how it's wrong what they're saying and how there's an alternative explanation. So when is this guy going to have a case, according to you, or is he never going to have one? The Big Bang is truth?
He needs to prove his hypothesis.
Well, it seems like he's making some pretty good...
Not just making assertions in an article. He needs to prove it by observation.
Well, hold on a second. That's apparently what he says he's doing. The Spitzer NASA telescope is the thing that he's been using to get these calculations. So now you're saying not just publish it in an article, which your earlier claim was, well, where's the peer-reviewed articles for these things? But now you're saying publishing an article is not good enough. I mean, if publishing an article is not good enough...
I never said publishing an article was the full thing.
You just said, well, he needs to actually find some observations instead of publishing an article. Earlier, publishing...
What are the observations?
Well, he just said it by Spitzer's NASA telescope. You said earlier he has to have peer-reviewed information in a journal. So you just kind of... spoke out of both sides of your mouth there. Before, he had to publish an article, and now you're saying he published an article.
Okay, we've given Don nearly an hour in the program here. Finish your point there, Don. You think the Big Bang Theory is true. Your gripe is
It's not a belief like it was when I was a Christian. It's basically the observations match the theory, and it's held up this long. Of course, there may be something out there that can explain it. You know, but that's the thing about science is if something comes along better, then science will find out that to be true.
Use the word science like some kind of monolithic, you know, God or something like that. I'm a scientist.
No.
I taught science for 50. The word science means knowledge. Theories do not necessarily fit into knowledge. Evolution is not part of science. Evolution is part of a theory that people currently teach. It's actually more of a religion. There's no observation. There's no experimentation. There's no testing.
Okay, we're not talking about evolution, Kent. We're talking about Big Bang cosmology.
Okay, I think this article that I was reading gives pretty good evidence that the Big Bang ought to be reconsidered. There are too many Band-Aids on it.
That's one scientist, one article, okay? If he's right, then he needs to come forward with all the evidence.
Where does he come forward to?
He did.
Huh?
Where does he come forward to? Do you want him to come to your house and speak in your backyard, or where is this guy supposed to go? He's publishing an article. What's he supposed to do?
Okay, well, what he's going to have to do is going to have to survive the process of science, all right? All these other people, including me, are going to have to go out and make these observations as well in order for it to be accepted as true.
Well, Don, I missed the very, very beginning when you called in. What do you do for a living? Who are you?
I work at a university up here in Ohio. I work at a public observatory. I give the lectures in astronomy. I'm an astronomy student. I do some research with the on-staff professional astronomer.
Okay, wait. So let me get it clear here now. We don't want a snow job here. You're an astronomy student
yes.
at a university in Ohio. Do you have your bachelor's degree yet?
I'm working on it.
So you don't have a bachelor's degree, and you're smarter than these PhDs, astronomers who wrote this article. You already know better.
I am. I'm not.
You are implying that you are.
Okay.
Okay. So.
What's your degree in?
Pardon me?
What's your degree in?
Oh, my degree's in education, which is why I'm smart enough to see when somebody's giving me a snow job like this.
See, right here, the affirming statement is coming from
a...
Hold on a second.
I'm going to use the same logic you're using. You're not a scientist, Ken.
Well,
come on.
A scientist is a person who studies science. Okay?
You're a high school teacher.
There's a 14-year-old girl who wrote a math book called ENCODE. She's absolutely brilliant. She would be classified as a scientist, and yet she doesn't have a PhD. That doesn't matter. I mean,
but, hold on, Don,
she's demonstrated her brilliance.
Don, was Darwin a scientist?
Huh?
Was Charles Darwin a scientist?
As far as I know, he was interested in botany and that, and biology.
His only degree was in theology.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he a scientist and I'm not? When I have two PhDs and taught high school science for 15 years, explain this to me.
Maybe we just need to define what a scientist is. What is a scientist?
A person who studies the science, and science means knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've studied it for 30-some years, and I'll match mine against yours any day, Don. I'll come up to your university and debate all your professors with half my brain tied behind my back.
Well, okay. Well, there's another guy that is on one of the local lists I've been chatting with while we're talking, and he's talking about maybe having a public debate with you. So
I'll
me and you and Jonathan and him.
Well, if someone is actually a professor, not a student studying, hoping to be a professor, not giving lectures to the kids who come by and say, look at this star, okay? But if someone's honestly a professor at a university, I've debated twice in Southern Ohio at Ohio University, and I've debated at Ohio State University, and I'll come back and take on every science teacher you can find, and I'll pay one of them $200 if they'll debate me for 2 hours, and if they can prove evolution is true, I'll pay them $250,000. Evolution's a religion. Always has been, always will be. I think it's a dumb one at that.
Okay, I'll tell you what. There's $1 million sitting out there at the James Randi Foundation if you can prove creationism to be true.
Well, that's an excellent point. Since neither can be proven to be true scientifically, why do all of us have to pay for one religion to be taught? Why don't you pay for my religion to be taught for a while?
It's not a religion.
It's a religion.
We're not worshiping anything.
We're
just trying to find out what the truth is.
But we've got it.
Science doesn't deal with truth. I thought that's what you said earlier.
It
doesn't deal with absolute truth.
Okay, you found the truth. We've got it right here. We're trying to give it to you. And
no,
I think it's interesting.
It's not the absolute truth.
I think it's interesting
let me ask a real quick question.
Okay,
Don, how old are you? How old are you, Don?
I'm 32.
32, okay, and I'm assuming you're a male, correct?
Yes.
Do you know that absolutely? Is that absolutely true?
I can look down at my pants and...
Okay, so if you see that you have a male genitalia down there, do you know absolutely for sure that by your scientific observation, you are absolutely true a male?
I have an X and Y chromosome.
So you're absolutely true a male?
Yes.
So science is working in absolute truth. You're not going to say, for instance, tomorrow maybe I'll be a female.
I know what you're trying to do, okay?
Well, you just said science doesn't deal with absolute truth, and if you really believe that, then how can you think you're absolutely a male? Maybe that'll change tomorrow.
You've got a point there.
You can know absolute truth by doing scientific observation.
No, I wouldn't say there were no absolute truths, Jonathan. I just said science does not deal with absolute truth.
Okay,
I use science to find things that are true, but the whole point about science itself is to get as close to the truth as possible.
Okay, well, we've got it all right here. You found the right place. We have all the truth.
It's not true. The Bible is not true.
Now, is that absolutely a true statement right there? Is that just kind of provisionally true?
That is true as true can be as far as I'm concerned.
Okay,
so that's absolutely true.
I need to ask this question. You don't have to answer, okay? Are you married? Do you have a family?
I'm married. I don't have any children.
Okay. Did you abandon Christianity because you found a scientific reason to abandon it or because of a moral dilemma where you didn't like some of the things the Bible taught?
No moral dilemma. I just, in exploring some of the questions that science asked and the Bible couldn't answer, that's one thing. Some of the historical claims the Bible claims to have has been proven not to be true. There's really no evidence there was even a Jesus Christ, at least not in the way the Bible describes him.
Okay, Proverbs 14:7 applies here. We've used the whole program. You're welcome to call in. Let me get some other callers on the line here. Any final comments you have on the Big Bang? You think it's true, and you think this article needs to be written by somebody else? or needs to be examined by other people?
It needs to be examined, of course.
Okay, they had a symposium of people there who all agreed. There's a lot of scientists who agree. The Big Bang. Fred Hoyle said the Big Bang theory. Fred Hoyle said the Big Bang theory is a dud. He invented the word. He said the Big Bang theory is in serious trouble.
I don't think it is, but.
Well, he does, and he's the one who invented the term.
Well, he's welcome to that opinion, but he needs to be able to back it up.
This whole thing said that they had a cosmology in crisis conference, so apparently they had quite a few people there listening to the whole thing who had a chance to voice their opinion before this thing was even published. So, I mean, everything you're asking for has already happened, Don. I'm not saying this guy's absolutely true, but all the criteria that you've demanded have already been met.
Yeah, well, okay.
I don't know if the observation has been reviewed by other astronomers. I'll look into that myself.
Well, he said it is on the Spitzer telescope at NASA, so I guess that's making
a claim. I can download that data and look at it myself.
We'll do it. But here we have a college student who teaches astronomy classes to kids who come by to look at the moon, claiming he is smarter than Fred Hoyle, who says the Big Bang's a dud, and claiming he's smarter than all these other PhD astronomers, and claiming he's smarter.
I've never said once that I think I'm smarter than these guys, Ken.
Okay, you're saying they're wrong, and you're right. You're going to hang on to this theory in spite of all the... It wouldn't matter if every astronomer in the world came out and said, look, Don, you're wrong.
No, Ken. I did not say that. If there is a consensus that comes out that says the Big Bang theory is wrong all along, then that's fine. We'll adapt.
You'll adapt.
There'll be another theory.
But you already said that you don't know what type of evidence would turn the Big Bang upside down.
Okay. Would you agree
Would
you agree that Fred Hoyle is an astronomer?
He was an astronomer. Yes.
Okay. He wrote an article back in 1984, 20 years ago, and said, the title was "The Big Bang Theory Under Attack," published in Science Digest, Volume 92. He said, and I quote, "I have little hesitation in saying that a sickly pall now hangs over the Big Bang theory. The theory's in trouble, Don, and you ought to just admit it."
Yeah, you know what Fred Hoyle believed, though? He believed in a static universe that's been here forever.
Fred Hoyle was an astronomer.
He believed in a static universe. The universe never changed.
Well, hold on. Are you now saying that he's guilty by association because he's criticizing the Big Bang, that, you know, we're going to reject his criticisms because of something else he believes?
His theory was for a static universe.
Well, that's completely irrelevant.
That did not change.
His theory, it doesn't matter if he believes the universe is static. That does not change his claims against the Big Bang.
Yeah, this is guilt by association, certainly, okay?
He's not proposing, he's not saying, I just don't think the Big Bang is good because I believe in static theory, or I believe in static universe, or anything like that. He's saying, here's why I don't believe the Big Bang. It doesn't matter if he believes that, you know, the moon is green on the other side, or if that his shoes are made out of cheese and his toes are licorice flavored. It doesn't matter what he believes. It's what he's saying that is denigrating to the Big Bang that's the subject of discussion here. You're trying to go on a red herring here.
Yeah, we need to go. Don, thank you for calling, and please keep studying the truth. When you get done climbing that mountain, you'll find we've been sitting there for a long time, and we'll welcome you at the top. And thanks for calling. I'll call in again later. Okay, folks, if you want to be on the program, we're so sorry we took so long. We've started reading an article about the Big Bang, but you can call in 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO. We are live this July the 12th, 2 days after Hurricane Dennis the Menace came through and tore up the city once again. You know, Jonathan, we've only had, like, I don't know, just probably 5 or 6 hurricanes in 50 years here in Pensacola.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get hit that often, but you've only been here like 3 years.
Two of them. Apparently, we're going to have a few more coming. There's that talk of Emily, who might be riding up the south here and might be coming to Messenger.
It's interesting. Interesting observation. All of them used to be named after women.
Mm-hmm.
There's no exception. All hurricanes are women. You don't notice they don't call them a himicane? You ever think about that?
Yeah, I know that.
So you'll find out when you get married, Jonathan. So
what is that verse? It's better to sit in the corner top of a house than in the house with a brawling wife or something like that.
True. You don't want a brawling wife. You get a good wife. Maybe 32 years for me in 2 days, my 32nd anniversary. I highly recommend marriage if you find the right one. I've met a few, though. I definitely would not want to be tied down. We'll be back, folks, after the break for the final segment. Stay with us.
One of the greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service, local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline Company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone, or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418. That's 800-311-2418. And tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help Truth Radio. 800-311-2418.
Over possible 10-851, white female driving a light blue SUV. Appears very agitated. Please be advised, I'm approaching the vehicle now.
Why did you stop me? I didn't do anything. It was that moron up there who pulled in front of me. He didn't even use his turn signal.
Ma'am, please keep your hands in plain sight and hand me your license. Slowly.
Fine. Here.
Mrs. Smith, and your vehicle registration?
What for? I didn't do anything wrong.
Your registration, please.
Oh, hang on. Let me find it. Here.
Oh, I see you own this vehicle.
Of course I own this car. Why did you pull me over?
You have a Jesus is Lord and a WWJD bumper sticker on your car. When I saw you yelling obscenities and such at that other driver, I naturally assumed the car was stolen. My mistake. Have a nice day.
Do people see Jesus in you? A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the final segment of today's July 12th Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Jonathan Sampson and Ken Hovind live in Pensacola, Florida. What's left of it after the hurricane, trees down everywhere, but not as bad as Ivan. And you're welcome to call in. We have a call from Norway. Is it Leif on the phone there?
Yeah, that's right.
Leif, yes. like Leif Erikson?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not one of the Vikings, are you?
No.
Descendant.
I repented from that religion a long time ago.
Okay, good. Yes, sir, how can I help you? What part of Norway are you in?
West Coast, Bergen. The city name is Bergen.
Oh, yeah. My grandfather came from Trondheim. Trondheim.
Yes. That's the northern part.
Right? Northern part. Go ahead.
I heard you spoke about Norway just some half an hour ago or so, the Doppler effect or something.
Oh, yeah. Vore står det til I dag. I got to practice the only Norwegian I know.
Jo da. Det står bra til, men... But, it's perhaps like speaking in tongues to you.
Yes. Go ahead.
Actually, I do speak in tongues, too.
Okay. Me too. English.
Well, I listened to Don, and I sensed double feeling. I sensed that my heart got aggravated, but at the same time, love came up in my heart.
Okay.
And I had kind of a word from the Lord come, and I don't know if this is who this is to, but I sensed that behind everyone that turns from faith in Jesus to something else, either to science or to some other religion, something or someone has deceived them. Now, this word that I feel I have, I do not know who it is to, but it goes like this. You think you are so wise, sitting there with your facts. Be warned, though, there is a limit to what is permitted. I am the Lord, I change not. I removed kings for my people's sake. I removed Pharaoh for my name's sake. And I will remove you, says the Lord, if you keep on persistently trying to destroy people's faith in me. So take heed and repent, for I love you, and I have good plans for you. But if you reject me, there is no other hope. For you, for I am the only one God, and I and only I it is that can help you.
Very good. Well said.
Something else, too. Listen not to those that pay you large amounts of money in order for you to work or move against believers of Christ. I am who I am. I am love, and I love you, says the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. See, I'm not as good as expressing the love of God as I probably should be. We do this program, and it's very easy to be sarcastic, and
yeah.
It's very, very easy to win a debate, win an argument, but I want to win the person.
Sure.
You know, you can win the war and lose the person, and Don's not the enemy, neither of those, anybody who believes in evolution. They're not the enemy. We want to win them.
And
I appreciate you.
I heard Jonathan say something very, it was Jonathan, it was very, very heavy. He said the Big Bang never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of miss such statements, and that's to be said. You say it. I don't.
Well, I was reading that from the New Science magazine right here, New Scientist.
That's what
okay.
the author said. That's
yeah.
what the author said the Big Bang never happened.
Right, glory. Yeah, that's the truth, and I want to echo it. And I say boldly, the Big Bang never happened. It's a rage against the Creator, really.
Yeah.
And that's it for me.
Okay. Well, I hope to come visit your beautiful country someday. I've seen lots of pictures. My mom used to talk about it a lot. She went over there, and she spoke Norwegian, but never taught it to me. So, sorry.
Well, yeah, it is a beautiful country. Actually, concerning that hurricane, we were praying for it this last week. So, well, not for the hurricane, but not praying for the hurricane, but we prayed for protection from those areas.
Yeah, I understand. And it must have worked because very, very little damage here at all.
Well, that's good. Well, glory to Jesus. And thank you.
Hey, come visit sometime. All right, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks, sorry about the instant message not working today. You cannot get hold of us. Tomorrow should be up and running. We've got to trace out all the problems here. We did have two large trees come down, take out power lines and everything else. And the neighbor's house across the street, when they hooked up the power just about 3 hours ago, the house caught fire.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Heath just said something about that when I was upstairs. Apparently, we had something similar to that when Ivan came through. We still had our generators hooked up when they flipped on the power, and it kind of just pushed a bit too much through the cords here and blew up a lot of our appliances.
The crazy things burned out. Light ballasts. It was mostly Building 4, the science center, because the neutral line was broken. And so it got 220 without being grounded, and it lit the cash register. I mean, it did thousands of dollars damage from the one line being broken. Now, think about it. From an evolution perspective, how many things have to be right in order for a person to be alive?
Well, I think from an evolutionary perspective, what type of good could all that power do? You've got a generator plus all the power from the city coming in there, and yet it blows everything to pieces.
Yeah, you would think all that extra power, things would go better, man. Cash register ought to fill up with money and it'd do all kinds of fun things for the world. Okay, if you can be on the program, 850-479-DINO, extension 136. And I forgot to mention, Jonathan, we're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth.
Which is usually said before every segment.
And I love saying that. It is so fun. Pushes the buttons on the poor evolutionists that love this theory because it really gives them freedom from God. That's the only reason he'd want that theory.
Well,
like
speaking
that.
Of pushing buttons, I just pushed the button, which would bring our good friend Jared on the air now.
Jared, good to have you back.
Hi, Kent. Yeah,
hi.
Managed to get your evolution as the dumbest theory comment in right before I got to say anything.
And honestly, I didn't know it was you, Jared, but had I known it was you, I certainly would have said it.
It was
foreshadowing. Almost like a connection, I was pushing my buttons.
Throw them in now, Miss Cleo. Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay, so let's just finish up this Barney Maddox issue, because I want to get that over with.
Okay.
Okay, so this article that's on creationevidence.org.
Yes, sir.
Okay. This guy has a B.S. from my alma mater, actually, Texas Christian University.
When you say B.S., you mean Bachelor in Science, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was just saying.
A lot of people have B.S., but that's okay.
Always kind of a double entendre. And he has a medical degree. He does not have a Ph.D., and he does not have a master's. So...
Are you saying a medical degree is not a Ph.D.?
It's not a Ph.D. They're different.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So, first of all, that's highly suspicious to me whenever this guy starts talking about genome research, because researchers almost universally have PhDs. That's the purpose of the degree.
Don't you think it'd be smart for a medical doctor to be involved in genome research? I mean, hello?
No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
Okay.
Doctors are very often ignorant on things outside their specific area.
Oh, everybody's ignorant on something, just on different things.
Yeah, but I'm just saying in general, like, what they're good at is practice. It's not about scientific research.
And I'm not sure they're good at the practice, but go ahead.
Okay. Also, he does not mention what his role, if any, was in any kind of genome research. He doesn't give any citations for any involvement whatsoever.
Okay, now why would any of this matter? All I did was read what he said. Now, you're trying to discredit the witness. Is that...
You listed him as the leading genome researcher.
Okay, and that is... Isn't that... I don't have the article in front of me.
I don't want to call you a liar on the air, Kent, but...
Uh-huh.
I mean...
That's what the article said from Creation Evidence, if I recall. This has been years ago I got this. The article was written like 92 or 3. Wasn't it? The genome research has been going on for like 4 or 5 years at the time. Is that correct, Jared?
I'm not quite sure when the project itself started.
Yeah, 88 is when it started.
But when I went to the Human Genome Project site and looked up his name, I couldn't find a single reference to it. So as far as I can tell, he had no involvement in that project whatsoever.
Okay, I guess you'll have to take that up with Carl Baugh, who has the article on his website. I just referenced to it.
Yeah, so. But if you're going to try to use this as a point against evolutionary theory to your audience, you really need to be careful whenever you label somebody as a leading researcher in a field of...
Well, okay, valid point. You may be correct on that. Now, is it true, though, that it doesn't take much... It could be as much as only one problem in the gene code to cause an organism to die, or abort, I guess, to not be born?
Yeah, this is the whole point that I've tried to make before, which is that there's a very big difference between saying three nucleotide changes can result in a fatality for an organism's development, you know, like in vitro, and that three nucleotides is often or usually or always the case that it causes that. Those are very, very different assertions.
Well, last time
he tries to give the impression that it's almost always or very, very often.
I asked you the question, is it possible that just one genetic problem can cause fatality?
A single base pair mutation?
Is it possible just a single one would do it?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it were possible in a very specific place, but it's irrelevant. Because, as we've said before, mutations happen all over the human DNA, and it doesn't cause fatalities. It happens all the time, every single generation.
Oh, right. I understand, sure.
Yeah.
Every one of us has probably as many as 3,500 defective genes.
It's not just defective genes, but like every single generation, there are mutations that include more than three nucleotides, on average.
Okay, but Barney
Maddox... We're not dying left and right.
Okay, is it true that there are 48 million differences between humans and chimpanzees
I don't know if it's true or not. It's possible, sure.
Okay. That's when they thought the difference was only 1.6%. Now that it's up to 7.7% difference, it ought to be a lot bigger, not a lot bigger number.
But here's a funny thing to consider about that. When they talk about this difference, are they referring to DNA that codes for proteins, or are they talking about non-coding DNA?
I don't know. Maybe Jonathan could answer that. He's been reading up on that stuff.
I think you would have to consider all of it, because when
I don't
you say
think so.
Why not? Non-coding DNA, you're talking about the so-called junk DNA, which is not, after all the successful studies in the last few years, it shows, it's obvious that it's not junk. It's not just floating around doing nothing.
I didn't say it was doing nothing, but it doesn't code.
Well, you're okay.
Proteins.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, it's not coding for proteins right there, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be involved in expressing differences between two completely different genomes.
If you took... the genome of a species, like Homo sapiens, and you removed the non-coding portions, you would produce a viable embryo.
I don't know. You might want to check out Discover Magazine, just I think November of last year. They did that. They took out the so-called junk DNA in mice organisms.
Oh, they were severely deformed. There's pictures of them and everything.
Jacked these little guys up. I mean, it was bad.
They were real. They would not have survived in nature. Had to keep them alive in the laboratory.
Okay, first of all, I would question if they did it right, because it took them several hundred tries to get Dolly to clone, for instance.
277, yes.
Okay, well, I'm not convinced that they did this accurately. I had to be convinced of that first.
Now, wait a minute. You start off by calling in saying Barney Maddox is not qualified as a medical doctor, and here you are as a mathematician giving advice to these people doing cloning. I mean,
I'm just doing simple logic. I'm saying if you got non-coding DNA and you take it out, it shouldn't affect what gets coded.
Well, that's another problem there, because non-coding DNA is taken out in places. For instance, I believe in the RNA transcription, little pieces are taken out to activate
other options. I mean, it's just like if you have two magnets that are just about 3 feet from each other, once you take out the space between them, you now have a magnetic connection. So that's not, you know, the exact example there, but it does serve some function, at least as a placeholder, to keep things from prematurely activating. So, I mean, that's my whole argument. Well, it is the case. You can check it out.
I'm going to research this, actually, but even if that were the case, it would still corroborate what I'm about to say, which is that if you've got two different genomes you're comparing, and you're trying to figure out what the difference is between them and what differences are significant, it's important to realize that if mutations happen in the non-coding regions and those things don't get expressed morphologically, then the term, like, percent difference all of a sudden has an ambiguous meaning. If you change all the junk DNA in humans to where they're, like, 50% different, does that mean that it's, like, not a human anymore?
Let me rephrase that for the audience here. If you find evidence that doesn't fit the evolution theory, it doesn't matter. If you find evidence that fits the evolution theory, we'll count that.
What are you talking about, Ken? That has nothing to do with life.
That's what you're implying here. Come on.
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with it.
Okay. Well, I think it does.
What I'm saying has nothing even to do with evolution at all. I haven't even brought up evolution yet.
Nature magazine, May 27, 2004, 1 year ago. They said, the difference is now 7.7. We're done. Call in tomorrow, Gary. Call in earlier. Sorry about the call. It's still long, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Somewhere down deep in the resources of Truth Radio, a video has been hiding, and I just discovered it recently. It's entitled The Civil War Debate. This is a public meeting with hundreds of people attending. It was held, I believe, in Georgia. There is one man stating the case for the North and another man stating the case for the South and a moderator. It's anything but boring. If you've studied our history going back to the Civil War at all, there's information in this video that you will consider to be really vital, and it's a really terrific experience to listen to it. I hope you'll order a copy as you write to P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. Your gift of any size will bring you a copy of The Civil War Debate. Write to us soon. Thanks.
The 2-1 pitch from Mallory. Curveball, strike two.
When right, throws you a curve.
Bottom of the third, here's the 2-2 fastball. It's deep to center.
It's a home run. Here's Rise Above with Rob Rosenblum.
As you sit around the Christmas tree today and open gifts, I hope you remember the true meaning of the season. And as you tear the paper off that last gift, say a silent prayer of thank you, Lord. Thank you for the people in my life. Thank you for these wonderful gifts. Thank you for the break from school. But most importantly, thank you for what you did for me. What a gift it was. There is none like it. And I will never be the same. Thank you, Lord. I love you. Rise above and thank God.
Rise Above with Rob Rosenblum is a production of Rise Ministries at RiseMinistries.com and is made possible by Rob's alma mater, Northwestern College, a distinctly Christian liberal arts college in Orange City, Iowa. Visit nwciowa.edu.
To Truth Radio. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California. That's Post Office Box 344, NIPOMO, Nipomo, California, 93444. Write to us. If you go to Google and put in the name Gavin DeBecker, G-A-V-I-N-D-E-B-E-C-K-E-R, you'll see that though you probably haven't heard of this man, he's very well known
in a lot of circles for his being one of the chief authorities on violence and the reason to fear it. He's written the book Fear Less, interesting title, magnificent book. I found a quantity of these, a small quantity,